This is an iHeart podcast.
Two different justice systems. Can we survive that as a country? James Lindsay joins us to talk about the education system in America. We have state senators leading the charge as they should. All that's coming up on I'm Right. I'm going to get to the two different justice systems talk here in just a moment, but let's go ahead and tackle the news of the day. Because I understand that I get wrapped up. Everyone gets wrapped up in their own issue when it comes to politics. That's one of the things that's fascinating about politics. I enjoy it. I'll get emails from you to the show, and you'll say things to me that oftentimes start out with this: Jesse, love the show, you're so handsome. Not all of them start out like that, but some do. But you don't spend enough time talking about fill in the blank, whatever it is. And you know, here's the thing about those emails. They've never bothered me because you're always right. We have an hour here every night. We got 1 hour. And there are so many gigantic important issues that we can never spend as much time as we should talking about everyone. Jesse, you should talk about the border more. You should talk about taxes more, the national debt more, Ukraine, Russia more. Jesse, you should talk about this or that. You're always right. The answer to that question is yes, you're right. We are trying to fit as much in as we can. But how much of that actually matters, your issue or my issue? How much of it matters to normal people when they can't afford things they used to afford? I don't know. I get to these inflation numbers today. 7.1% year over year. Food's up 10.6. Electricity 13.7. Gas 10%. Housing 7.1%. But these are just, again, we talked about this before. These are just numbers, right? They matter. They're statistics. This is stuff you can repeat to friends and family. It matters. But the truth is, I don't need to come read you these numbers. And these aren't news to you. You eaten out recently? We eat out on Saturday night. And we try to be good with our money, and we try to budget. And so when the bill comes and you figure out that now it costs, not a fancy restaurant, a standard restaurant, it costs $100 for a family of four to eat out. We're not talking about rounds of drinks and stuff like that here and desserts. It costs $100 to eat out. When you're watching grocery prices go up and up and up and up, is there something more important to most people when they see their standard of living drop? It's something that we really haven't experienced in this country before, and it's something you're experiencing right now. I'm experiencing right now. People get used to a certain standard of living. In America, we've had most of our history. I realize we've had blips in the radar, but most of our history, people have enjoyed their standard of living going up. I eat out more than my dad did. We're doing well. Moved out of our house. We're moving on up to the east side. You know, that kind of a thing. Now, people are experiencing something they have not experienced, most people, in their lifetimes. They're watching their standard of living go down. They're going to travel less, eat out less. Your groceries are not going to be as plentiful as before. It sucks. And it sucks that all the people who've brought us to this point are still, for some reason, sought out as experts when we ask them, hey, when's all this going to end?
I think we'll see a substantial reduction in inflation in the year ahead.
It's going to take a year.
Well, I believe by the end of next year, you will see much lower inflation if there's not an unanticipated shock.
Man, we're in trouble. Did you hear what she just said? I love the qualifier she puts on there now, because she's been wrong about every prediction ever. Oh, you're worried about inflation? Yeah, no, it's all going to keep going up. It'll probably go down. Oh, I'd say, well, and the next year it should go down. I mean, unless something happens. Building the ultimate, because of course something's going to happen. Something always happens. That's called life. That's the planet. That's the world we've been given. Something always happens. Oh, unless something happens. So, and I don't have an answer for you on this, but does it feel like this is just how it's going to be for a while? Does it feel like that to you? Because it sure feels like that to me. And so I'm going to move on to the two-tier justice system here, because this is the issue, frankly, that I think is most important, the two-tier justice system. But I want you to say, I spend so much time on it because I'm so passionate about it, but I understand if you don't frankly care about anything else until you can afford the same amount of groceries, the same amount of hamburger meat you used to be able to afford a couple years ago. I get it if that's your only issue, because it sucks, right? But I need to clarify why I care so much about the two-tier justice system. We have the latest and greatest information out about Trump. They have some guy, some Obama guy named Jack Smith, doing the special investigation into Trump. He's the special counsel. By the way, you appoint a special counsel when you think there's some sort of a conflict of interest. The point of a special counsel is so he can be, you know, above all the politics. He's just going to be a straight shooter. He's just worried about the law. Justice is blind. Yeah, this guy is an Obama guy. It's just tied right into the Obamas. And the team investigating President Trump, the team is twice as large as Robert Mueller's team. Please don't be under the impression, just because this isn't in the news every day, that all this stuff with Trump is blowing over and it's all gonna work out in the end. These people are coming for him. They're coming for him. I mean, he's a system disruptor. He's the first of our system disruptors. Don't worry, you won't be the last. When they're finished with Trump, there will be more that rise, because the people will demand we get one. So eventually you'll get one, over and over and over again. You'll keep getting them. But the system has a way of crushing system disruptors. All corrupt systems do. All late-stage republics, when the governments in every part of the country becomes corrupt, they know they're corrupt, and they lock shields to crush people. I mean, we have Secretary of State, Republican Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. I always have to read that name, Brad Raffensperger. I mean, this is Brad Raffensperger 2020.
So look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
So you remember that call with Trump and Raffensperger in 2020? Brad Raffensperger, he's the one who leaked that call. He had a private call with President Donald Trump. He took that call. He leaked that call to the media. Why do I bring this up? Because the latest subpoena is Brad Raffensperger. It's every part of the system has locked shields against Trump. But this is not a story about Donald Trump. It's really, really not. Now, it matters. Watching a system disruptor be destroyed matters. It matters a lot. But there is something you must understand. I've tried to get through to people over and over and over and over about this. What's happening right now is so much bigger than any one man, friend or enemy. What's happening right now is so much, it's so far beyond Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi or Ron DeSantis or this person or that person. What's happening right now is gigantic. And the reason I'm so passionate about it is, if we have a justice system like we have now, if this continues or gets worse, and it probably will, this will end the United States of America. It will end it. You remember, we've talked to you a whole bunch about the pro-life activists who've been arrested by the Department of Justice. And we're talking 60, 70, 80-year-olds, pastors. What did they do? They apparently were in violation of some weird FACES Act. Their crime, the dastardly crime that brought armed FBI SWAT teams to their door, was reading Bible verses and singing Christian worship songs at abortion clinics, attempting to save lives. No violence, no nothing, simply out there attempting to save lives. Well, as you already know, because we've talked about it extensively on the show, the Department of Justice is out there kicking in doors, rounding them up. Why? Now we know, we assumed before, but now we know, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, remember, that is the top law enforcement arm in the United States of America. Everything, including the FBI, falls underneath the DOJ. Why are they doing this? They're doing this in response to the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade. So the DOJ is admitting that they're sending the FBI to the homes of 80-year-old pastors because it's a temper tantrum response to a Supreme Court decision they don't like? I know inflation matters. I know it matters to you. I'm not poo-pooing it. That ends the nation. This will end the United States of America. You know what they're not doing? They're not investigating who's buying Hunter Biden art pieces for $200, sometimes $500,000. You realize Hunter Biden is now implicated. In writing, we have the laptop. He's implicated in a verified laptop with his father in a worldwide influence peddling scheme. This family is linked. This family is dirty. And now Hunter Biden is making crappy artwork that anonymous buyers are purchasing for several $100,000. And the FBI is worried about somebody busting open the Bible app on their phone and reading a couple verses from the New Testament to someone about to have an abortion. The country, as it's currently constituted, will not survive this. We will not. This gets fixed, or we will not survive. The fixes, well, the fixes are more complicated. You should know I have a solution. Other people are listening. Other people are acting on this solution, and we will talk about that with Nathan Dom of Oklahoma later on in the show. We got James Lindsay. We got a great Light in the Mood tribute to Mike Leach. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. And let me tell you something else that has made you uncomfortable. That stupid fat wallet you carry in your back pocket. Why are you doing that? Remember that Seinfeld episode about the fat wallet? You know, no matter what size your wallet is, you're sitting on that and it messes your back up and you have to adjust where your butt is. Look, I've been there. There's no judgment. I've been there. But you don't have to live like that anymore. You don't have to live like an animal. You can go get a Grip 6 wallet. Slips right in the front of your pocket, in your front pocket. Now, that's one thing that's great about Grip 6. Doesn't take up a bunch of room. I'm a minimalist. I don't like a lot of things in my pocket. But Grip 6 also locks in these credit cards. You know how the leather wallet wears out over time, or you're trying to get the cards out and you can't get the one out you want? If I want my cards in Grip 6, I just squeeze the little lever and they all come popping up. Or they stay locked in no matter what. They're for sale right now, Christmas time. Grip 6 also has the best socks you've ever had in your life, and their belts. I got my father-in-law one of the belts. My mother-in-law is complaining he won't wear another belt. They have these great adjustable belts. I didn't even know how they did it. Grip6.com, promo code Jesse. There's your one-stop shop for Christmas time, baby. Grip6.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
Florida, you know, it is against the law to mislead and to misrepresent, particularly when you're talking about the efficacy of a drug. We see just the other, just recently, Florida got $3.2 billion through legal action against those responsible for the opioid crisis. And so it's not like this is something that's unprecedented. So today, I'm announcing a petition with the Supreme Court of Florida to impanel a statewide grand jury to investigate any and all wrongdoing in Florida with respect to COVID-19 vaccine.
I'm going to try to contain myself here because I saw two bits of news today that had me coming out of my chair with excitement. I saw that little bit about Florida and they're asking the states to join a coalition to, frankly, investigate our completely corrupt and despicable federal government. And then I saw my buddy Nathan Dom, Oklahoma State Senator, with not one, not two, but three bills that looks like he intends to use Oklahoma's state power to protect his citizens. And man, is that the way forward. I'm so freaking excited about it. Nathan, they're your bills, not my bills. So let's take them in order. Number 21, what is it?
thank you, Jesse, for having me on. You and I understand the importance of state powers. Thank you for saying that. It's not state rights. Individuals have rights. Governments have powers that the people give to them. And the states do have power that we can use to constrain this out-of-control federal government. And so the first one, Senate Bill 21, would actually say that the county sheriff is the highest-ranking law enforcement officer in that county. They are elected by the people, and so they have a responsibility to protect the people's constitutional rights. And it says that that means that any federal employee that tries to use to arrest a Oklahoma citizen, or that tries to do a search or seizure without going through that county sheriff, that they actually could be arrested by that county sheriff, and that the district attorney would be obligated to try that federal employee for kidnapping or attempted kidnapping. This brings some accountability into this discussion, because right now these agents, whether they're FBI, ATF, IRS agents, they are all unelected bureaucrats. But that county sheriff, he has to stand before the people and say, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to represent you. He has to be voted in. And it's time that we put some constraints on these unelected bureaucrats that are running amok in our country.
Gosh, this kind of stuff gives me hope. Okay, now I hate to even ask this, but I'm going to ask this about all three bills. It's a great bill. Obviously, you know I'm on board. Is this the kind of thing that's going to pass or not?
It's going to have uphill battles. So, for instance, Senate Bill 23 is our state Second Amendment Preservation Act. I introduced it years ago. There's actually about a half dozen of us that introduced it in the state Senate. So the chair of the committee said, all right, I'm going to let one person run it. We're going to come up with kind of a consistent version. And so it was actually another senator that ended up running the bill. But leadership came in and said, hey, we need a watered down version. So we passed a bill that was basically just a statement, but there was no teeth to it. So my Senate Bill 23 actually puts teeth in that and says that if any federal entity or officer violates our Second Amendment Preservation Act and tries to do any gun grabbing measures, then they would be arrested for that. Right now, there's no teeth. That's what these, you know, cowardly Republicans do, is they'll implement a bill and they'll say, see, we passed a Second Amendment Preservation Act that's really just a political statement that has absolutely no teeth to it. They water it down because they don't want that quote unquote conflict. But you and I realize, Jesse, that there is conflict right now, because we're dealing with a Department of Justice that, well, first of all, we don't have a justice system in America anymore. We have a legal system, and that legal system is targeting pro-life protesters that are actually peacefully protesting, but at the same time, they're not bringing any prosecution against those that are firebombing these pregnancy centers or anything else. So we see that this entity, this apparatus, or as you call it, the system, is corrupted. It is working against conservatives, against Christians, against people that actually follow the Constitution. It's perverting the Constitution, and it's coming against us. And so we need the states to step up and push back. The likelihood of these passing, I mean, it's going to be an uphill battle. But, you know, I got the nation's first ever anti-red flag bill passed. I got our constitutional carry bill passed when the rhino, weak-kneed, you know, spineless Republicans were trying to stop that. We ended abortion in Oklahoma before the Supreme Court actually came out with the Dobbs decision. That was my bill as well. So I'm always willing to lead the charge. But Jesse, I know you know this too. People like us, we're ahead of the curve because we've studied history. By looking back, we can see what's ahead of us. And so many of these other Republicans, the only thing that they're looking forward to is their next election. And so they're trying to find the middle ground, the middle of the road, do as minimal as possible just so they can get reelected. But it's past time like that. We need a new right that's willing to stand up and punch back, like you said.
I love this so much. All right, now let me ask you this. Okay, so you have a bunch of weenie, low-T GOPers in your state house and state senate. That's not exactly news. We have tons of those here in Texas as well. But you're the one that's in this legislature. Is that improving? I know there are still a bunch of useless turds who are there, but is it getting better? Are we trending in the right direction?
Yes, so conservatives are gaining ground. Not enough. Our current leader in the Senate started out as a conservative, went down towards the path of power, and has become considerably less conservative. He's basically the Mitch McConnell of the Oklahoma State Senate. Hasn't really had a challenger, because in times past he cut a deal with whoever was challenging him and offered them a position if they would step aside and support him. But we actually just had a challenger just recently step up, and of the 40 Republicans, the vote came down 21-19. So it was very, very close. that we were able to almost replace the rhino that's in there right now, that has appointed all the liberals in the Republican caucus to the leadership positions and stuff. So right now, they still have pretty much full control, but the scales are getting very close to tipping, and you know, I'm going to continue to be that thorn in their side, and exposing them. They don't like people like me being vocal about it, because then they have to contrast themselves to that. If everybody just sits down and shuts up and nobody points out their hypocrisies and what they're doing, then the general public doesn't know. So I appreciate how you are exposing them as well, and talking about how we need real leaders that are willing to stand up and fight and say what needs to be said, not worried about people's feelings or how they're, you know, they're going to get hurt by that. Words don't actually hurt that much. So we got to speak the truth, man.
Go get them, Nathan. Gosh, this fires me up. You keep going, boss. I'm behind you, all right? Appreciate you.
Thanks for what you do, Jesse. Keep it up, man.
Hear that? Scales starting to come our way. Who's that very handsome TV host who's been telling you to get out of your blue state, get to a red state, and run for office? One of the most important things you can do, on top of school board and everything else, one of the most important things you can do is challenge your useless state representative or state senator. Challenge them. Go run. You can do it. I'm not qualified. No. They're not qualified. You, normal person, you're the most qualified. Go challenge them. Kick them out. Take ground. Offense. All right. We're not done. We still have James Lindsay. He's going to teach us a little bit more about communism. Before we do that, let's do this. Let's remember, governments take a while to change. It's going to take us a while to win these battles, to win enough of these seats, school boards, state house, city council, all these things. It's going to take us a long time to take back enough ground. It's just the way it is. But the good news is we actually have opportunities every day, every single day. You don't have to wait another 2 years. I can't wait till 2024. You voted today. You're sitting down watching I'm Right Tonight. You know you voted today? You voted with your money. Corporations are now completely woven into this despicable government. Not all of them, though. There are great ones all around you. The bad ones should be starved of your money. The good ones, you should patronize with purpose, purposeful. Public SQ is the tool to do this. I love this friggin' app. Doesn't matter what you have, iPhone, Google, whatever you have. It's an ever-growing database of businesses that share your values in your area. You vote every day. Vote with your money. Vote the right way, all right? Public SQ. We'll be back. Well, boy, I don't even know how to tackle all the despicable, disgusting news when it comes to all this endless LGBTQ mob stuff these days. I was talking to my producer about it just now before the show. And he was saying so much of this stuff is so gross, we can't bring it to you because the kids watch the show. Families sit down with their kids. It's so despicable, I can't bring it to you. So you know what? I'm going to bring you a man who actually wrote a book on it. You know him very well on this show, my anti-communist brother. His name is James Lindsay, and he has a book out, The Marxification of Education. And please, if you are a parent or a grandparent, read this book, The Marxification of Education. All right, James, before we get into what just happened to my son, why don't you tell me, what are you talking about? Marxification of education? They're not communists, James.
Of course they're not. They're just anti-fascist or anti-racist or anti-whatever America or whatever it is that they want to be today. They are communists, Jesse. They are, of course, communists. And they've taken over the education system. And they succeeded in taking over the education system, probably according to their own historians, by 1992. And so we're 30 years down the track from a communist takeover of our education system. So I wrote a book explaining how that happened and what it entails, so parents can understand, grandparents can understand, the good teachers who are still out there can understand, and they can actually mount an effective retaliation to take our education back for our kids.
James, tell me this. I'm a parent. I know things I'm seeing. We'll get to one of the things I'm seeing in a moment. But parents want to know. They want to know, what am I supposed to be looking for? Because their kid's social studies teacher is not going to walk in the fifth grade with a hammer and sickle shirt on. Well, maybe. In this country, they might at this point in time. But for the most part, they're not doing that. So what should they be looking for? What should parents even be asking their children?
I mean, with the kids, is you're going to have to ask them, are they driving into identity issues? Are they asking you about your sexuality? Are they asking about your gender? Are they talking about race outside of the context of a basic lesson about slavery or whatever? Are they turning lessons that look like they would be a math lesson? Do you start a political conversation based on what looks like a math problem? If that stuff's happening, there's a major problem at your school. If they're sending home, you know, invitations, hey, you can come join the Gay Straight Alliance or whatever. These organizations, whatever their intentions were when they began, maybe they were good, maybe they were bad, are tools of an indoctrination program or a thought reform or brainwashing program that they're using now.
James, my kid, he had something. Last night, I'm sitting there doing my show, my radio show, and I get a couple texts from my son. He's on a website called Quizlet. Now, he's not in a public school, but I know this is one of the websites a lot of people use. Quizlet, you go take practice exams if you're one of the kids. And my kid sends me this, and I just couldn't believe my eyes. The ads that are popping up on Quizlet for my son, who's 14 years old, are trans liberation, take the LGBTQ quiz, trans girls is girls. James, why are they targeting kids?
Well, because they aren't going to succeed by targeting adults. Children are much more impressionable than adults. They know this. They know that if they want to be able to have the next generation, they have to transform the next generation. By the way, just like you saw liberation on the screen a second ago, transform is another one of their words that you have to watch out for. If you see them saying transform this or humanize that, you know you're dealing with Marxists. Those are Marxist code words. But they're going after kids because they can get to kids. They can brainwash kids. They can make kids think that this is the only way to feel good. They can make them feel bad about their skin color and good about taking on a queer identity. So they have to constantly propagandize, market, promote these kinds of things. Drag Queen Story Hour is one such example of how they do this. And I cover that extensively in the book as well.
One final question on this, because I want to move on to a couple other things. Why the sexual stuff? Why is so much of this stuff sexual? I could understand a communist sitting in front of my children and talking about, you know, evil, greedy capitalists or something like that, sounding more like Vladimir Lenin. But why is all this stuff so perverse?
Because it's powerful. It's absolutely powerful. What they realized in the 1960s, and the communists before that had kind of already been experimenting with this, is that the enemy of communism is stability. When you have a economic system that makes people stable, you can't gin up the old school communism that we're used to that you were mentioning. When you have people who are psychologically and emotionally stable, or stable in their families, or stable in their churches or their faiths, stable in their culture and their communities, they won't become radical activists. Sexuality is extremely sensitive, extremely powerful. Identity is extremely powerful. And when you mix those together and get kids to focus entirely on who they are as sexual beings, you destabilize them psychologically, you destabilize them emotionally, you destabilize their families, you destabilize their connection to culture and to religion, and they become very moldable. They become people you can direct to the so-called right answers about how they should be in society, which is to be a communist activist for the people doing this brainwashing.
Who's this Brazilian guy named Paulo you're talking about? I've never heard of this guy in my life.
Yeah, that's a problem, Jesse. Paulo Freire is one of the most influential Marxists who ever lived. He kind of rose through the 1960s to fame for having some kind of education program that allegedly taught people to read. The way that he did that was, rather than teaching them to read, you know, simple or basic words we all remember from our childhood, see Dick run, see Jane run, blah, 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 these simple, easy one-syllable words. He said, no, 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 you teach them to read by teaching them words that are politically relevant to their lives, words like slum, misery, death, starvation, stealing, dying, all of these kinds of things. And you bring that information to them to try to get them motivated and interested in learning to read. And that's where you see this idea of transforming a math lesson, the word problem that's given in many teacher trainings right now is Johnny's going to the amusement park with his mom and dad. It's 30 miles away, or it's 50 miles away. They've driven 30 miles. How far is there left to go? Simple second grade math word problem. And then they ask, well, who's been to an amusement park? Isn't that interesting, kids? Who's ever been to one? Some kids raise their hand, some kids don't. And then they say, well, why are some kids able to go and others aren't? And then somebody says, not everybody can afford it. Or my parents won't let me. And they're having conversations about poverty, socialism, race, parental authority. The mom and dad prompt becomes what Paulo Freire called a generative theme in their lives to talk about parents. Do you have a mom and a dad? Maybe you just have a mom and now we're having a conversation of feminism. Maybe you just have two moms. And now we're having a conversation about sexuality in the classroom in place of the math lesson. And Paulo Freire is a Marxist who devised this method of stealing education to turn regular lessons into Marxist political indoctrination lessons.
Gosh, so much evil out there. All right, we're going to switch gears because I want to ask you about this. Obviously, Pete Buttigieg, the Rear Admiral, was caught taking a bunch of private planes. He's, of course, the transportation secretary who's keen to tell everybody who will listen that you need to get rid of your gas car. We have to eliminate oil and gas. But, of course, he's taking taxpayer-funded private jets all over the planet. There's some history lessons in here for us, aren't there, James?
Oh, yeah, they go all the way back. This is something that elites have set themselves up to do going back to pre-antiquity. We can go back actually to kind of prehistoric almost Egypt very early on, and we see this in this book called the Corpus Hermeticum, for example, that was a religious text of kind of occult magic, if you will, that nobody's ever heard of, but there are lots of people like this. And it sets up a society in which the elites, the people who have access to the divine mind, as they call it, the nous, the mind of God, can do evil things while excusing themselves from evil because they're doing them for the right reasons. They're doing them with understanding. And other people, of course, can't do that. They don't have access to this. And we see this throughout history, whether it's Plato writing in the Republic and writing in the Timaeus and writing in the Phaedrus about how we're going to, or the Symposium, how about how we're going to set up a system where the elites get to have love of boys to reach higher culture, which translates exactly to what you're experiencing with your own son right now, all the way down the line, whether it's flying in private jets to fight climate change, whether it's, you know, eating steak so they can be well nourished while you eat bugs, whatever it is, they get to do the thing that they see as evil and you don't because they're doing it for the right reasons and you're not. And this is an ancient philosophy, if you will, or it's not a philosophy, it's sophistry that it gives the elites who buy into this the ability, and who can convince others of it, the ability to excuse themselves while oppressing everybody else.
James Lindsay, appreciate you, my brother. Come back soon.
Yes, sir.
Dude's sharp, man. Dude's sharp. Love when he comes on. We all get smarter, don't we? All right. We're not done yet. You don't talk enough about fill in the blank. We talked about that at the beginning of the show. We get a lot of this about the border, and that it's so true. America's being unmade, and one of the least sexy issues to talk about is the border. We have to have another border talk. We're going to have it in just a moment. Now, something else that isn't sexy, your allergies. I've had them. It's not sexy when you have to blow your nose every 15 minutes. Why don't you just grab an Eden Pure Thunderstorm or three? You know, but I was on just the over-the-counter allergy medication most of my life. And then a buddy of mine told me, hey, grab this Eden Pure Thunderstorm. And I've always had air purifiers. I went off his recommendation. I pulled it out of the box. I couldn't have been less impressed because it was so small. I said, dude, this is tiny. He said, just trust me. I plugged it in my room, left, came back an hour later. You could taste how clean the air was. It cleans your air constantly. Viruses, mold, get your air cleaned. They have three packs of these for sale now for my viewers. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse gets you that three pack for $200 off. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. We'll be back.
So we do have estimates of how many encounters there are at the border on a daily basis. We have processes and procedures in place to identify those individuals, to process them in an orderly fashion, and then to do what is appropriate based on that processing. And we have believed that that system is a system that does an effective job of being able to determine who is coming across the border and what the right way to deal with their case is.
Well, sounds like they're doing a great job. I don't know what everyone's so concerned about. Joining me now, my friend Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, I'm looking at some paper here, and average of 2,400 plus migrant encounters over a three-day span in El Paso. Man, that doesn't sound like it's being very effective to me, but you're the expert. I'm not. Mark, could you elaborate, please?
Depends what you mean by effective. Effective for them, as you could sort of, if you read between the lines of that statement you just played, what they're saying is, are they successfully processing people? That's the term they're using, not deterring illegal immigration, not protecting the border, processing people, which is to say, they take their picture, whatever it is, they may hold on to them for a day or so, and then they let them go. That is success for these folks. That's how they define success. So, you know, he's not lying. That's what they want. The question is that what we should, is that the policy we should actually have? And the answer is obviously no.
The answer is obviously no. And I have another question, and I know it's a stupid question, Mark, but I'm stupid, so I do that. That doesn't sound legal. It can't possibly be legal for the President of the United States of America and his staff to intentionally open up the border. This can't be legal, right?
Nope, it's not. The immigration law mandates that anyone caught illegally crossing the border has to be kept in detention during the entire course of our deciding what to do with them. Either you return them, or they have an asylum hearing or what have you, and then they're let go into the United States. Just mass releases into the United States is not permitted. What the tool they're using is something called parole, which is different from the criminal justice parole. What it means is it's an authority, a very narrow authority, that the executive has to let in people who don't have any right to come in. That's the kind of thing you use for somebody, say their appendix burst, and you got to get them to the hospital, and the closest one is 5 minutes away across the border. Something like that. You can use parole. This administration is not using it on a one-by-one basis. It's using it in a mass sense to let in hundreds of thousands of people. That's clearly a violation of law, and yet Congress, isn't interested in doing anything about it because the Democrats in Congress support this.
Mark, can you explain the reason why there's all of a sudden a surge in El Paso? The border's just so far away from most Americans. They don't understand the different regions. They don't understand the different reasons why there are these migrant surges. What's going on?
I actually don't know specifically why El Paso now, because these things do shift around. It depends on which part of the border, which cartel controls which part of the border. Sometimes every part of the Mexican side of the border is controlled by one or another cartel. And sometimes some of the cartels will say, okay, we're not collecting a tax for coming through our turf. You guys can just, as long as you make your way out, you can do it. And so people will start going there because it's cheaper. There's all kinds of dynamics here, and I actually don't know why El Paso specifically now, but, you know, it could be San Diego tomorrow. South Texas has always been the big place over the past couple of years because it's closest to Central America. You'd have to go the shortest distance. But in a sense, it doesn't matter which particular place they're coming across. Doesn't matter because this administration is basically letting people go wherever they cross. So this is kind of like, the wind blows this direction instead of that direction. It doesn't really matter that much. The basic truth here is that this administration is inviting mass illegal immigration.
Okay, Mark, ICE. People don't even really truly understand. ICE's job is to arrest and deport people who are here illegally. There's only about 6,000 ICE agents, and a fraction of those, I believe about half, were even charged with doing the arresting. So we're not even taking this seriously anyway. And now ICE has been charged with fewer arrests. Do I have that right, Mark?
Oh, yeah. A big drop in deportations. We got some data from ICE through a Freedom of Information Act request. And so what we did is we looked at people who were deported because they had been arrested by local cops for local crimes. Most people who get deported are deported because they come to the attention of the government because they beat their wives, sold drugs, drive drunk, whatever it is. So they're arrested for a local crime, their fingerprints are scanned, and boom, they go into DHS and they flag pops up. This guy's an illegal alien. The arrests of people who were identified in that way have dropped 70% under Biden's administration. And in some parts of the country, they've dropped 100%, where they've basically deported nobody who gets arrested for local crimes.
Oh, Mark, I'm hearing the Mexican authorities are bringing some of these people. That can't possibly be right, right?
Well, they are sort of moving them around in some cases. There's no question about it. The issue, though, is that we are inviting them to come through Mexico. And the Mexicans are basically saying, well, if you guys are doing that, then let's get them the heck out of our country as quickly as possible. In a sense, I sort of sympathize with them, because under Trump, it was different. Under Trump, we demanded the Mexicans work with us, but we were rowing in the same direction. Both of us were trying to limit illegal immigration. What Biden is doing is saying, we're going to have you guys enforce our border so we don't have to do icky things like enforce the law. And frankly, if I were the Mexicans, I might be doing the same thing in this circumstance with Biden as president.
Yeah, I can hardly blame him. Well, the bad news, it actually goes from bad to worse, is you don't have an actual opposition party, it doesn't appear, to an open border. Here's Senator Tom Tillis talking about amnesty's going to get us a closed border.
These are people that came to this country as minors who are now doctors, scientists, teachers, hundreds serving in the military. And I think the American people understand this is very different than this concept of amnesty. This is going to give them a path, and it's not automatic. They're going to have to work and maintain those high standards. And for that, we get a closed border and we shut down the cartels. That seems to me like something worth working on.
Of George course, Bush yes, I'm called. Sure that's going to... Please,
George Bush called, he wants his immigration policy back, you know? So there's a reason the Republicans are called the stupid party. But in the Republican Party's defense, Senator Tillis of North Carolina, for those of you in North Carolina, pay attention, is sort of an exception. The party has become, especially since Trump, more hawkish on immigration, and it's notable that Tillis is one of the guys who really stands out as an exception to the rule, not the rule. So there is, you know, there's a little encouragement there. He's not a standard bearer for the Republican view on immigration in general.
Praise God for that. Mark, I appreciate you, man. Come back soon.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.
All right. I got a different kind of a light in the mood tonight. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we get to that, let's get to this. You know, we have specials, right? Great specials. Sometimes they're history specials. Sometimes they're about China. Sometimes they're about me. And oftentimes these specials are only for First TV supporters. Gets you access to all kinds of things that everyone else doesn't get access to. Go sign up and become a First TV supporter. TheFirstTV.com/support. Go sign up today, all right? We'll be back. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. So to lighten the mood today, we're going to talk about death. Hang with me a second. No, just hear me out. We're all going to die one day, right? I'm going to die one day, and I tell you what, I want you to have fun at my funeral. I want you to laugh. Why? Because I like to laugh. Mike Leach, great football coach, passed away. 61 years old, passed away, heart condition. Two-time National Coach of the Year, air raid offense, all that stuff. And all that stuff's fine. All that stuff's good. I'm glad he accomplished all those things. But you know what Mike Leach did? What so many, you know, coaches don't do? Mike Leach made life fun. He laughed. And I don't know Mike Leach. He's not a friend. I don't want to sit and act like I have some personal story about him. But I bet you money Mike Leach would want you laughing today. And I bet you he'd want you laughing about some of the ridiculous stuff he's said in his life. So with a salute to Mike Leach, here's some of Mike Leach's greatest hits.
Got your coffee. Yeah. It is early. How do you take your coffee? What's the best way to take your coffee?
Well, coffee tastes terrible anyway, so don't put anything in it to obstruct the harsh, bitter taste.
We talked about on the broadcast how you hate candy corn. What's your favorite Halloween
candy
gift?
Corn. I mean, I completely hate candy corn.
The women lose their mind. Your fiancé's going to lose her mind. Your mother-in-law is going to lose her mind. Your mom is going to lose her mind. Several of your sisters and female relatives are going to lose their mind.
Instead of playing hard and getting a first down and getting a play, then, you know, you want to sit behind a shade tree, eat a fish sandwich, and drink a lemonade with your fat little girlfriend.
It's a good win. There's a lot of people. It's like Woodstock, except everybody's got their clothes on.
It was the best, man. Rest in peace, Mike Leach, and prayers for his family. I'll see you tomorrow.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
This is an iHeart podcast.